Bibles open to James 3 this morning, James chapter 3, and we're going to finish up the third chapter, and we're going to start in verse 13. We've been walking through the book of James and talking about how it's supposed to apply and how it gives us really practical information for our everyday Christian life. And what's very helpful for James is, for some people take it bad, some people take it in a good way. But what's very helpful is that it doesn't cut you any slack. You know exactly what it's saying, and there's really no way around it. And what's really frustrating to me is when people read a verse in the Bible and they can turn it around and make it sound like almost anything that they want, and some verses just don't even let you do that, and you kind of can notice it when you try. And James is a lot like that. That's why we're calling our series Practical Spirituality, because it has to do with your everyday life, and you can notice whether or not you're applying it in your everyday life. Because of the indications that James gives you about if you're applying the principles are obvious to see. So far in James, he's reminded us that our belief, which should come out in our life, what we believe should come out, and it should manifest itself in our works. Remember in James chapter 2, he was talking about faith without works is dead. If you have real faith, your belief is real, if your trust in the Lord is actually genuine and your relationship with Him is real, then it will come out with what you do. Doesn't mean that you have to work to get to heaven, but if you are going to heaven, then it will come out in your works. And then he starts to give a few examples of that. Earlier on in that chapter, his first example of that was loving your neighbor as yourself, which he calls the royal law. And that's something we can push back to the back burner and do all the Christian stuff and not actually love each other. But that's one of his examples. We should be loving our neighbor as ourselves. This is God's law for you as a Christian. This is one of his first ones he gave to everybody, and so it should be coming out in your life. And then he goes on in chapter 3, and he talks about another example. And he talks about your tongue. And the way that you speak will give you an indication of what's in your heart, because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. What's inside's going to come out. You shake a cup long enough, what's inside's going to flow out. And we could say, where in the world did that come from? It came from what was inside. And you can paint it however you want, but ultimately, what is coming out of your mouth is showing you what's inside of your heart. And that's why that's very helpful. It's a gauge of our spirit. It's a gauge of how close we are to the Lord, because he says that that's what we are going to see. But here at the end of chapter 3, he talks about another way it should manifest in your life. If your faith, the way that you think about the world, if what you believe about God is actually genuine, it will affect the way that you view it. And here we're going to be in verse 13, and he's going to talk about godly wisdom. Godly wisdom. Let's look down at verse number 13. It says this, who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. At the very beginning of the book of James, it tells you, way at the beginning, in chapter 1, he tells you, if you need wisdom, you need to ask from God. All of this comes, all of the book of James, and really ultimately obeying all the Bible, comes from thinking the way that God thinks. You can put it into your life, and you can apply it, and you can just try to put on a show long enough. But after a while, if you don't think the way that God thinks, you're going to have a real hard time loving your neighbor as yourself. You're going to have a real hard time controlling your tongue. You're going to have a real hard time dealing with trials the right way, as he talks about in chapter 1. You have to think the way that God thinks. And wisdom is not knowing stuff. Wisdom and knowledge are different things. Wisdom is not knowing information. Wisdom is knowing what to do with the information. And I referenced this when we were in chapter 1, but the Bible here makes it very clear that not all wisdom is created equally, so to speak. The world will tell you what to do with knowledge. Some people have said all truth is God's truth. So we don't have different things. We don't have a different pool of truth. We just have a different pool of what we do with that truth. We believe what the world says about itself. We see the truth, but then what the world decides to do with that truth and what Christians decide to do with that truth ought to be, and we've seen, are really polar opposites. There is a difference between godly wisdom and worldly wisdom. There's a difference between what God says to do with his truth and what the world says to do with truth. And here he describes the differences between the two. How you think, what you understand will manifest itself in your heart and therefore in your life. And he shows some indications of whether or not you have worldly wisdom or you have godly wisdom. So let's look at verse 13 first before we get into our outline. He starts it out by saying this: who is a wise man endued with knowledge among you? The question is almost like it's searching for somebody. Okay, show me somebody who's wise. And it's like insinuating that somebody's going to raise their hand and say, oh me, I'm wise, pick me, I have knowledge endued unto me. So this is what he finishes the verse with. So let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. So what's he saying? Same thing he says in chapter 2. Oh, I have faith. Well, let me show it by your works. I should see your genuine faith in what you do. Wisdom, we always put inside of our brains as if it's only an inward thing. But here he says, oh, who has wisdom? Oh, I have wisdom. Well, then let him show it in his conversation. The word conversation means lifestyle. It doesn't mean the things that you say. It means not only the things that you say, but the places you go, what you do, who you hang out with. Your conversation should manifest your godly wisdom that you claim to have. It should, in your good conversation, his works with meekness of wisdom. So let me ask you a question. Do you have worldly wisdom or godly wisdom? I think we might be surprised how often worldly wisdom seems to seep into the way that we think. You go to different areas of the world, people just think differently because it seeps into them from what's around it. Now, Christians ought to be peculiar, but it's very difficult, and a lot of times you can tell that the way people think are just different because they're allowing the world's wisdom to seep into it. See, back in the day, in the Andy Griffith ages down in the South and in the East Coast, the world thought a lot like Christians did. And a lot of Christians were Christian-like because a lot of the world was Christian-like. You know, there's a lot of principles in Andy Griffith you watch that are right straight out of the Bible. But as the world changed, then a lot of Christians just changed with them because they were seeping in from what was around them. They were being chameleons. They were being different. And see, you go to different areas of the country. You talk about Pastor Davidson was here last week, and he said when he was over in Washington, he made a statement and said, now they would think this completely different, even when he's in a church, because a lot of Christians allowed the world to seep into how they think. So what does he say here should be the indication of whether or not we have worldly wisdom or godly wisdom. So we're going to separate them into those two. So the first one, we're going to talk about what he talks about first, which is worldly wisdom. So number one is worldly wisdom. Now this is important. He doesn't describe it here as worldly wisdom. He describes it as wisdom that is from above and wisdom that is not from above. So watch this. The worldly wisdom that he describes here is wisdom that does not come from God. That's the way that he describes it. This is not the way that God thinks. This is not the wisdom that comes from God's throne. And a lot of times, the way that the Bible describes the way that we think here is the way that it describes Christians who used to think this way when they were unsaved. When it usually attaches the world to a way of living or the way of thinking, and it's talking to a Christian, usually it references to what they used to be before they were made a new creature in Christ, and that's what they call that worldliness. In Ephesians chapter 4, he says this way: this I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their hearts, who being past feeling have given themselves over unto lasciviousness to work all uncleanness with greediness, but ye have not so learned Christ. You did not learn that from him. And here he doesn't just say that the world walks that way. He says that's how they default. And a lot of Christians are walking like they are. He says, don't walk like the Gentiles walked, because they're walking around as blind people. He says they're walking after the blindness of their hearts. And if the blind lead the blind, both shall fall into the ditch. And there's a lot of Christians following the world and wondering why their lives are falling apart with them, because they're thinking like the blind people are. Here he gives a couple descriptions of what that means in James. First of all, it manifests itself inwardly. Letter A is inward. There's inward changes or inward differences between the way that a person who thinks like the world, a person that thinks like God, is like. Because the first thing he identifies are things that happen in your hearts. Look at verse 14. Now it comes out, but it says in verse 14, but if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not. I'm going to talk about that here in just a second. But he gives three things there real quick. First one is bitterness. Bitterness. People who think like the world often are bitter people. This comes from a word that means to pierce. It means an emotion or something going on in your heart that hurts you. Dr. Jim Shetler defines bitterness this way: an unresolved violation of your justice system. Something that happens and you don't let it get resolved. Now, he preached a whole message on this, and he talks about some different passages, and he goes on to forgiveness. But the whole point is, somebody who has something happen in their life, they're bitter. They don't let it be resolved. Even if they're the ones who could resolve it, or even if the other person doesn't want to resolve it, but they can resolve it in their own hearts, they let it stay unresolved and they become bitter. There's a lot of bitter Christians. Have you ever met those? They say that the Lord is going to be their all-sufficiency, but they don't live that way, and they're just bitter. He says the world lives like that. Everyone's out to get them. Something is always going wrong. You're afraid to ask them how their day is because you know that they're going to tell you. And you don't want to know because it's never good. Well, my car, well, I get frustrated with that. How are you today? Well, and you, that's how they start it. It's never good. No week is good. You know, if I told you all the bad things that happened in my week, I'm sure the list wouldn't be extremely long, but I could tell you every time. I could identify that's how I live my life. That's what I focus on. That's what my life is defined by. Everything that goes wrong. That could be who I am. And a lot of Christians, that is who they are. They're bitter. Something's always wrong. They don't live in the joy of the Lord. He says the world lives like that. That's how they think. That's how blind people live. Bitter. But he attaches it to this, number two. Envying. Envying. The fellows are going to come by here in a moment. If you have your attendance slip, just drop that in the plate on the way by. We would appreciate that. Envying. If you have bitter envying in your hearts, this has to do with rivalry or jealousy. The word bitterness is also connected with it. It's not just rivalry or jealousy, but it's bitter jealousy and bitter rivalry. Jealousy is greed and resentment that begins to actually harm the person that feels that way. It's starting to hurt them. And this is how the world lives. We can see this too. They're consumed with what they don't have, what they ought to have, what the other people do have, what they have that they've experienced that they haven't been able to experience or do. And that's where the entitlement personality comes from. That these people have something and we don't, and I wish, and they should have, and it's bitterness. Bitterness and envy are both things the Bible describes as people who live like the world, who we ought not to live that way anymore. Titus 3:3 says this, for we ourselves also were sometimes foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving diverse lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy, hateful, and hating one another. He says bitterness and envy are what we used to have sometime. 1 Corinthians 3:3 says this. He's talking to Christians. Ye are yet carnal. That means you're living like the world lives. You're living in the flesh. He says, for whereas there is among you envying and strife and divisions, are ye not carnal and watch, walk as men. Now, when we're Christians, we don't cease to become people. But what he's saying is you walked as the men, the world, the people who belong here. We talked about that in 1 Peter. The people who belong to this world. You don't belong to the world, and yet you're living like them. Envy. And then number three, he says this, bitter envying and strife. Strife. Now, I love this word. I've told you this before. But this word does not mean contention. Although, contention would be a fruit of this. It doesn't mean to have an argument with, or to have disagreements with, or have problems with. It means to electioneer for office. It means to lift up yourself. And if we watch politics, how do the people electioneer for office? They lift up themselves in the process of pushing people down. There's some ads that the only thing on the ad has nothing to do with the person actually being voted in. It has to do why the other person is a bad person and that they voted for this and they shouldn't. Now, I guess I need to know what both of them are believe. I get that. But it's funny. It said, hey, this person did this. In 2012, they voted for this and they said this and they're for this. So vote for me. I approve this message. And that's how a lot of Christians live. They lift themselves up by pushing other people down. This is what it says in Philippians 2. You've heard it before. Let nothing, do you know what nothing means? It means no thing. So anything that classifies as a thing shouldn't be done with strife or vainglory. And that's the same word for strife. Electioneering for office. But the word vainglory is great too. It means to glory about something with nothing to give you license to glory about. It's empty glorying. You have nothing to glory, but you're glorying over it anyway, and you're trying to lift yourself up. But in loneliness of mind, he continues, let each esteem other better than themselves. This is definitely the way the world thinks. This is why everybody's so easily offended, because every statement that's made by anyone anywhere somehow affects them. This is why there's so much of an entitlement personality, because they assume that we deserve everything. And if we don't have it, we're bitter because we think it's owed to us. This is why there's contention and problems and strife, because everything has to do with our opinion and our way of doing things and what we want to do. And this is why there's strife in churches, because we're always worried about us. What I want, what I thought, what we think, what I think the way it should be done, what I wanted to do, what color I wanted to paint the walls, what color I wanted to have the carpet, and your opinion and what you're doing and what you teach. And if you taught the class and they liked you, then it could not have possibly been good because I wasn't the one who taught the class. And it's so much about us. We're completely missing our purpose. Bitter envying and strife, but watch this. Letter B, not only is worldly wisdom something that happens inward, but it's also deceptive. It's very deceptive. See, we say it so blatantly right here in Sunday school, and we leave them, oh, I don't have any of that, do I? Or verse 14, if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, so don't glory in that. That's not a good thing. But he moves on, and lie not against the truth. In what way? Why does he say lie not against the truth? Because the first thing that you're going to say in response to that is, well, I don't have any of that. Or, well, maybe that's not a terrible thing. But in the next verse, he moves on by saying this. This wisdom descendeth not from above. We're going to move on to what he says afterward, how he describes it. He says, see, that wisdom isn't from God. Don't lie. Don't deceive yourselves into thinking that being upset at somebody else for any reason, for your rest of your life, and that's just how you live, don't lie to yourself and say that that's something that's from God. When somebody has something or somebody has a position and you wanted it to be envious toward them, that's not from God. Don't lie to yourself. It says when you have to fight with other people in the cause of Christ in order to get ahead, don't lie to yourself. That's not from God. This wisdom descendeth not from above. And we can convince ourselves that the things we do are okay. Because it's deceptive. The Bible says in Jeremiah 17, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? It lies to us. There's a lot of people. Now, when I say this, I'm not saying our church is full of this, but it's very easy, because we're all fleshly people, to live like this all the time. There's a lot of Christians. They hate, they envy, they gossip, they push ahead, and they're proud, and they do it all in the name of Jesus. Because they just feel like, in this situation, what I think is the best thing to do. See, their heart is lying to themselves to say that bitter envying and strife is somehow wisdom that is from above. And he says it is not. And so, well, then how can I know if my heart's deceitful? That's why he gave you a book to tell you to look out for this and to look for this and to know which one belongs to who. And if you listen to God, then you're not going to have to listen to your heart because your heart's deceitful. And that's why I say I'm really glad that it doesn't cut us any slack, because if I was the one to try to have to figure it out, I'd probably get it all wrong. So because he gives it to us, we can look for that. Don't look at ourselves. Jeremiah 17:10 goes on, the heart's deceitful above all things, desperately wicked. Who can know it? Well, I don't know. Who can know it? That's why he says in the next verse, I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. Don't look to yourself for the answer. Look to God, because you're going to have problems and you're not going to know it. You need to look to him for it. But not only is it deceptive, but letter C, it's adversarial. Sound it out. It'll be close enough. I'm not sure if I made up the word. I don't think I did, but there it is. I was trying to figure out how to identify this one, but I thought it was very interesting. Look at what it says in verse 15. This wisdom descendeth not from above. It's not from God. So what is it? But is, look at this list. This is interesting. Earthly, sensual, and devilish. What list does that look like? The world, the flesh, and the devil. Earthly, sensual, and devilish. Those are your three enemies in life. Your flesh, sensual, the world, their philosophy, which is all influenced by the devil. And what all that bitter envying and strife that we often assign to God, all of that is coming from all of our enemies that are trying to destroy our life. We can go into Ephesians chapter 2. It says, wherein in time past you walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now works in the children of disobedience, among whom also we all had our conversation in time past, in the lusts of our flesh. Those are our enemies, our flesh, the world, and the devil. So that way of thinking, watch this, it is against you. It is not for you. You can push ahead, but it's only going to push you back. You can envy, but it's not going to give you blessings. You can be bitter, but it's not going to fulfill you. And we are so convinced by the world around us that somehow those things are okay. The flesh has always steered us to self-destruction. The world is blind, has only led people into ditches, and the devil is seeking whom he may devour. What comes from any of those things is not going to be good. It's adversarial. It is your adversary, all that way of thinking. But number four, letter D, it's also confusion. Where envying and strife is, verse 16, there is confusion and every evil work. That's why a lot of Christians have no idea what the answer is, because they're listening to the world, and the world is just confused. They'll take any way that they think and justify almost anything that they want to. There's a lot of people who are worldly wise, but they just live in confusion. They don't have the answer. Well, I don't know. Maybe that would be all right. You ask them, and they say very philosophically that they have absolutely no answer to the question. They're confused. 1 Corinthians 14 says that God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints. So the churches, the body of believers, the individual believers, are not to live in confusion if we live according to the way God says. We think like the world, you're not going to have the answers, you're not going to have the peace, you're not going to have the foundation that you're searching for. You're going to live in confusion. And not only is it confusing, but last in that list, it is evil producing. It says, for where that is, it says there is confusion and every evil work. The world has used their wisdom to justify every form of perversion, drinking, drugs, 30-some genders, killing babies, denying elderly people their rights to life. And all of it has produced an entire culture of gray lines where nothing is clear anymore. It's confusing and it's evil. Now we can all nod our heads to that because we agree, yes, I don't think the world should live like that. But the church can sometimes live in gossip, the wrong focus, striving against each other, a loss of fruit. We do it all in the name of Jesus, but we don't have any answers. We live in confusion, and only the thing that's producing is evil. It's not what we're supposed to be doing, and that can happen to Christians too, and that's why he's saying that in James. If you think like the world, you're only going to get what the world gets. And you can do what the world does in your church and in your families, but you're only going to get what they get in organizations and in the family unit. and in your heart. You're only going to have confusion. You're only going to have evil. If you're seeing those things in your life, that's what you're going to get. And it's not from God. Now, number two. That was worldly wisdom. Here, the last two verses, he gives you godly wisdom. Godly wisdom. He goes on. So wisdom that is not from above is all those things. But verse 17, but the wisdom that is from above. And this is how he describes it. Letter A. This is important. It is first pure. First pure. Verse 17. The wisdom that is from above is first pure. Now, the word pure has several ideas to it. It's very, very, very close. It comes from the same root word as the word where we get our word holy from. It comes from the same root word. It means holy. It also means clean as opposed to dirty. So the wisdom that is from above is clean. It's holy. 2 Corinthians 7 says, having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all the filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of the Lord. See, if our lives are to be what they ought to be, our minds should be clean. They ought to be holy. But then third, pure also has this idea of unmixed. I didn't give these three. You can write them on your margin if you want. It also has the idea of unmixed. If something is pure, in this sense, it means it's completely like what it is supposed to be. So you go to the, I've said this before, you go to the grocery store, you pick up a jar of honey. It'll just say honey. You pick up the jar next to it that costs 8 times as much as the jar that's the same size. Why? Because next to it, it says this is pure honey. Now what's the difference? This honey is supposed to not be mixed with anything else. All of this is honey. It is pure. You say, when you talk, you say, well, that's pure, and you give a word. Why? Because what you're trying to communicate is that it's completely that. When the Bible says pure, it does have that idea as well. And all of those go together. If your heart is unmixed with the world, it will be clean and it will be holy. It should be completely what God thinks. It should be completely in line with Him. It shouldn't be mixed with a lot of conglomerations of other random stuff that just kind of seeps into you from the world. It should be pure. First John 3:3 says, every man that hath this hope in him purifieth himself, even as he is pure. But in addition to that, the grammar of this verse is great, and I have to give it to you. He says this, the wisdom that is from above is first pure. The word first means first on the list, before everything else on the list. This is the first one. Everything comes after it. But there's a little word in the original language that's thrown in there that doesn't come out quite. It's a little bit less emphatic, but it's more emphatic than not having it at all. And it means in fact. It's a little bit less emphatic than when Jesus says, verily, verily, truly, truly. He's saying, listen to this. This is true. I'm giving you the truth. That there's a word that's very close to that in the middle of that verse that means in fact. So what is he saying? The wisdom that is from above, in fact, is first on the list. Pure. So you can try to change the way that you think and all the other things he's going to say. You can try to be peaceable and gentle, easy to be entreated. We can go into all of that. But he says if you're going to get to any of that, you must first indeed think purely. How mixed are you with the world? Because I guarantee you, the more mixed you are, the more difficult you will find it to think like God does. And if you don't think first pure, you're not going to think that gentleness is what it is. You're not going to think that being easy to be entreated is what it is. You're not going to think that being peaceable is what it is because you're mixed. It must first be pure. Then, letter B, all of that, thinking first pure, produces fruit. It produces fruit. I was going to give you the list. You can write them in there, but they're right in the verse, so you can just read them. So he says this, the wisdom that is from above is first pure, and then he says this, then, and he gives you all the rest of them. The word then means afterward. After you think pure, then you can be peaceable. That's the way that comes out, and if you had read that in the original language, they would have caught that right away. First, then. And all the rest on the list don't seem to have a hierarchy. You don't have to be then peaceable, then gentle. It says that all that comes. All that comes after being pure. But if you don't have those things, watch this, if you don't have those, then you're not thinking like the wisdom that is from above. And so what is it? Let's look at it real fast. Peaceable. First pure, what then? Peace. Clarence Sexton once said this, wisdom that is from above is different from wisdom that is from beneath, because the earthly, sensual, and devilish person may be a smart person, but he can divide families, break up homes, cause confusion in a family unit, divide churches, he disrupts fellowship, and he must have his own way. He is anything but peaceable. But wisdom that is from above is peaceable, and the wisdom that is from above leads us to a path of peace. There's a lot of Christians who take a situation and they cause confusion. But there are Christians that are only peaceable when the situation is peaceable. Then there's pure Christians who make peace. Let me say that again. There's Christians who will make something that's completely holistic and they'll make it confusing. Then there's Christians who are only peaceable if it's already peaceable. Then there's Christians who will take something that could be easily dissenting and make peace. See, those who think like God are peacemakers. They make peace even if it's not easy to have peace. You can be the one that goes with the flow one way or the other, or you can be the one that causes confusion when there was already peace. But the good Christian who thinks like God does makes peace. Number two, I don't have them on your list, but the next one is gentle. Gentle. This is where it has the idea of appropriateness. A lot of people don't know how to deal with people gently. They're too busy blasting people and putting them in their place. They're not gentle. 2 Timothy 2 says, the servant of the Lord must not strive, but be gentle unto all men. Next one, easy to be entreated. This word means they're compliant or open to reason or being told something or how to do something. There's a lot of people you can't tell anything. You can't tell them that they're wrong, or you can't tell them how to do something. They'd almost rather just come up with it themselves. They'd rather do it wrong than be told how to do it better. They're not easy to be entreated. That's pride. And I get that a lot. Sometimes somebody will tell me, hey, you should, and I'm thinking, well, who are you to tell me how to do this? I can do it just fine myself. And see, that's not being easy to be entreated. I'm not being allowed to be told something. So the wise person is a student of all people, whether or not they're learning what not to do or what to do, but they learn from people. And people who have wisdom, they glean it from them. But Christians who are not pure, they're not easy to be entreated. You can't tell them anything. Number four, they're full of mercy and good things. The word mercy means kindness and goodwill toward others, and that's why it says good things. That's maybe the most generic term you can possibly have in the middle of the Bible. Good things. It's just goodness comes from them. Mercy, kindness, that comes out of them. We can force mercy and kindness out here and there, but we will not be merciful or good people when we're forcing it. When we think like God, that comes out. It produces that fruit. Number five is impartial, without partiality. That word means partial, and then there's a negative at the beginning, not partial. If you want to know what that means, go back to the beginning of James chapter 2, when he describes people who do not love their neighbor as themselves because they are partial. See, the word partial means to draw a line between two groups. It means to see a difference between. You are like this, and you are good. You are like this, which means you're not as good. You are separating people into their categories. That's what the word partial means. See, the Lord loves everybody. A lot of times we don't. We love some and not others. He says those who think like God are not separating people into groups. They love them. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. And if we get that into our minds, we'll stop becoming the judge of who is good and who is not. Now, I understand there's a difference between being discerning and whether or not you're relying on somebody or trusting somebody to do something for you, but a lot of times we bleed that into every area of our life where it doesn't belong. Impartial. Last one is non-hypocritical. Same thing. Word comes from a word that means a hypocrite, to make a scene, to act as if you're an actor in a play, and then there's a word and there's a letter at the beginning that says not any of that. Non-hypocritical. This means to be real. This word kind of has a double negative. It means to not be real. It means that you're being genuine and sincere with people. You're not acting. Those that are living pure lives tend to be the ones that admit their faults because they're being sincere. Those who are not living pure lives are the ones that tend to say that they have nothing wrong because they're acting. You ever notice that? The preachers that come here who are the most genuine and sincere and open, and you look up them as the godliest people, tend to be the ones that spew their difficulties the most. Because they're open and sincere. They have less to hide, and so it doesn't hurt them either, and they also want you to know who they really are. The people who you feel like maybe not are not living the way that they should by the way that they say or the things that they do, they tend to be the ones who always say that they have everything under control. They don't struggle with any of that. Well, they don't need to have any of those problems. Why? Because they're having a mask. They can't be sincere because they know they have things that they need to not show. It says the one who thinks like God won't have the things that he can't show, and he can be sincere. And when he's trying to help people, he can tell them what their faults are. He's not being hypocritical. That's what thinking like the Lord is. So you can look at one list or the other. You look at the one and say, I have this in my life. That means you're not thinking like God does. Or you can look at the other list and see whether or not you do have those things in your life. And if you don't, then you're still not thinking like God does, because that's how he thinks. And so he gives us all of this for us to know. And lastly, he says, he finishes with this. Letter C. Those who produce the fruit, gentleness, goodness, easy to be entreated, all of that, from living pure, how does that produce itself in your everyday life? Those people make peace with men. They live pure, they think like God, and therefore they make peace with men. I think it's interesting. It says, first pure, then. Now look at the categories of it. Pureness has to come with how you think like God. The then comes with how you deal with people. Gentleness with people. Peaceable with people. Easy to be entreated with people. All of this is horizontal after you take care of your vertical first. But he finishes by saying this in verse 18. The fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So the people who have that fruit of righteousness, those who are living pure and they have that coming out, they are sowing that. They're laying that in the ground. They're laying that in the soil of their life in peace. And what's being produced in their life is peace. It's a very interesting picture of somebody putting something into their life. And so ask yourself this, what soil is your life providing around you? How easily can righteousness and peace flourish in the area around what your heart is producing? Those with godly wisdom have a peaceful soil. They have an environment that they produce in their life with God's wisdom in their heart that brings forth peace. Those who don't have a soil in their life that brings forth contention, brings forth problems, brings forth evil and confusion. That's why he says in Matthew 5, blessed are they peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Those who are like God will make peace. So do you think like the world thinks, or do you think like God thinks? It shouldn't be hard to see it anymore. And I will have to say, there are some people who primarily think like the world and primarily think like God, and there are some people who tend to totter back and forth. But ultimately, the question should be, where is your mind focused? Is it first pure? Then all of that will come. And this is an evidence in your everyday life of is your spirituality, if your belief, if your faith is actually becoming who you are or just something that you do. Do you have God's wisdom? We're going to pray. I thought that was a blessing to you. We're going to pray. We're going to have a couple quick prayer requests. Brother Daryl, do you have some of those? Oh, awesome. And then we'll be dismissed to our morning service. Father, thank you so much for giving us time around your word. And Lord, I pray that you would help each one of us to think like you, to have godly wisdom. And we can easily call worldly wisdom godly wisdom. And I pray that you would help each one of us to go to your word, to find what you say, and not go to our hearts to find what we think. Each one of us are so guilty of that more often than we should be. I pray that you would help us to reach the world the way that we ought to by thinking the way that you do. I pray that you'd be with these many prayer requests we're about to hear in just a moment, that you would meet those according to your will. We pray this in your name.